Back here on the Mighty 690, it is 7:43, and it's time for our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres. And we have joining us in studio from Cherokee County Extension, Clayton Lester. And from the Walcott District, we have Kenny Dotson. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So as we continue along here, first day of July. So welcome to July, gearing up for the 4th. You excited here for, you do fireworks all or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I have like a family celebration, and luckily I don't have to buy the fireworks.
That's good.
And there's plenty of kids that like to shoot off the fireworks, so it's more of a show.
Hey, there you go. That makes it good.
Yeah, I got some family that live down on Grand Lake, so we're going to go down there this year and watch the fireworks.
I bet they have a big show down there.
I imagine so. I bet it's going to be pretty cool. So.
Yeah.
And bottle rockets are legal in Oklahoma, and that's all I got
to
say.
Hey, that's good. That's good. That's a reason to go down to Oklahoma. I love meeting some bottle rockets. So.
Fireworks are fun.
They are. They are. So, hey, you know, just along with, you know, 4th of July, nothing as American as a good old big tomato on that burger and but I know that, you know, we do have some problems when it comes to these tomatoes sometimes, and you wanted to talk, Clayton, a little bit about tomato cracking. So
yeah,
my voice cracks.
So tomato cracking. So tomato cracking is a pretty common problem. So it's when tomatoes experience fruit cracking when they grow quickly as they near maturity. So the cracking is caused by pressure inside the fruit. So cracking early in the season is likely related to, like, tomatoes' top growth, which can result in blossom and rot when the weather turns hot and dry. So tomato cracking does not affect tomato quality, but does affect the overall physical appearance. So tomatoes are not the only plants that crack either. So tomato plants, along with jalapeno pepper pods and mature eggplants and some others as well. A couple causes of tomato cracking are an imbalance of a water supply. So a fluctuation of back and forth. Some more information I found, so excessive nitrogen, so fertilizing mature plants with high nitrogen fertilizers like ammonium nitrate at 33% nitrogen or urea at 46% N can cause fruit to split and become inedible. So adding additional nutrients to well-established vegetable gardens is rarely necessary if compost is added regularly during the year. Also plant genetics, for instance, jalapeno pepper pods develop very superficial cracks regardless of the weather conditions. So the cracks usually begin to appear as the pod turns from green and black to red. The cracked tissue becomes calloused and the eating quality is not affected. So many large fruited tomato cultivators like beefsteak types are prone to significant cracking. So many melons are susceptible, yeah, as well. So consistent deep watering and harvesting before full vine ripeness will help minimize the problem. So there's different kinds of cracking involved. So radial cracks start and form simultaneously and radiate and run straight down the sides of the tomatoes. Then we got concentric cracks, so circle that form around the top of the tomato and follow and go down. So there is varieties that crack worse than others. So we got black creme, Cherokee purple, and heirloom cherry tomatoes. So a little bit how to prevent cracking. So tomatoes have a root system that is very dense and fibrous. So it's quite efficient. It's quite efficient in picking up water. So root systems become unbalanced with the top of the plant. So several things such as increased water and changing temperatures can cause it. So regulation of consistent water, not going through spells of little to no water, then overabundance. So modern varieties have been bred to experience less fruit cracking than older varieties of heirlooms. Mulching can be another thing that can prevent cracking. Benefits of mulching include weed suppression, keeping those weeds from growing back around your plant, especially in your rows, moderating soil temperatures and preventing the formation of a hard crust on top of the soil. Crusted soils restrict air movement into and out of the soil for water infiltration, so the water moving back and forth in the soil. So hay and straw mulches are popular for tomatoes, but may contain like weed killers or volunteer grain seeds. So grass clippings can also be used and should be applied as a relatively thin layer, only 2 to 3 inches thick. So clippings should be dry because wet clippings can mold and become so hard that the water can't pass through. So don't use clippings from lawns treated with a weed killer until some time has passed. So with most type of weed killers, clippings from the fourth mowing or after treatment may be used. So the clipping should not be used as much if the lawn is treated with a product containing quinclorac, such as the chemical called Drive. If the weed killer has a grass killer in it that contains that chemical quinclorac. So, and also select a variety with a firmer and stretchier skin. So some varieties like that for good cracking resistance could be like a Jetstar, Mountain Spring, Mountain Fresh, Mountain Pride, Florinia, and Sunleaper have a good cracking resistance as well.
Do we often see cracking like after we've had a lot of water, like a lot of rain or watering something? Is that kind of when it actually happens, or does it kind of depend?
Usually it's kind of the opposite, okay. Because when the tomato starts to get dry, when it's kind of surviving, it tends to get like a tighter skin, it kind of tightens up, and it's when that flush of water happens. So maybe to your point, yeah, it's when they suddenly get water, it goes from tight to burst, and that causes the skin to crack.
Sure. No, it definitely makes sense here. But yeah, I mean, I've had like the Jetstar variety before, and that has honestly done pretty well. I've had just a little bit of it, but I feel like I've noticed some of these varieties, they'll just seem to crack all the time, whereas other ones, they're a little bit more resistant to that.
Mm-hmm. And Jetstar is pretty popular. Celebrity is popular. I just don't know the cracking rating for it. But grow what you like to grow. Everyone has like their favorite tomato that they know they like to grow.
Yeah.
But then you can't beat weather. So sometimes you'll just get cracks.
Right? Yeah. No, it sure will happen. So, trying the best to prevent this as best as we can. Now, when it comes to, fertilizer, like Miracle-Gro, that sort of thing, I mean, on tomatoes, is that something we should kind of still keep applying? Or is there a point, you mentioned kind of fertilizer, where we might want to just kind of lay off on that?
Yeah, so for fertilizing, you can use anything you want, really. Obviously, you should get it tested. You should know exactly what your numbers are and try to do it that way. You can also just toss a 10-10-10 on it and guess. I can tell you from experience, a lot of gardeners, when they're fertilizing, they fertilize a lot, or they fertilize and they compost. And so a lot of the soil results I see for gardeners tend to be pretty high in P and K, the other two numbers. So I see a lot of numbers on your sheet that are pretty high, but nitrogen is one that actually moves in the soil. So the nitrogen either gets fixed up as like a semi-immobile molecule, or it gets aerialized, usually in like the ammonia type or like urea. That's why when they do the anhydrous ammonia on the fields, they have to put it underneath the soil, because otherwise it volatilizes and burns off, essentially. Or it can go down in the nitrate form, but the nitrate form also goes down and leaves the soil. So nitrogen is one that you can apply pretty often. It's not a corn plant, so you don't really need to like pump it full of nitrogen all the way up until harvest season, but usually a little bit of supplemental fertilizer can help, especially if you notice your plant's kind of stalling or not doing as well, or like, man, this thing should be going crazy. You're like, let's just give it a little bit of fertilizer. Probably some nitrogen, just because of its mobility. And then also, potassium tends to be one of the more fruit-centric nutrients. But like I said, sometimes your numbers are already crazy, so sometimes a soil test will help with that.
Very good. So, obviously it kind of depends on when we, planted and everything like that. But, I mean, folks should probably start to be getting some tomatoes here by now, I would think.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Some people are already. Mm-hmm. And then some people, as we were talking about off-air, herbicide drift has been a bit of a concern in its own right. But then, of course, with water issues, we've had so much rain recently, and that's been causing some stunting, some problems with plant growth. I was telling James, I've got a plant that's just totally dead because, it's warm, it's sunny, it got water, it should be looking good. But it looks like it's wilting because it got too much water all at once. The roots can't handle it. And that can also be related to cracking. That can also be related to some blossom end rot, which is also kind of water dependent on how it moves throughout the tomato. And that's why you get blossom end rot sometimes, even with enough nutrients.
No, it's definitely a good reminder here as we kind of go from one extreme to another with a ton of rain and then now all this heat here. This is just going to keep happening. I mean, at some point, once we get past a certain temperature also, are we concerned that, the fruit won't really be setting?
Yes, usually after that 90-degree temperature, if you think it's too hot, the tomatoes probably think it's too hot. They tend to like temperature and heat, so usually like the 75 to 90, maybe 95 degree range is okay. But when we start to get those hundreds, especially if they're just being baked in the sun, then they tend to stall out. They tend to not put on new flower buds because they're just surviving during the daytimes, and the night times they're recovering, and it's still pretty hot.
Very good. So some good reminders here. We have, of course, another segment here on our Green Setup program, but there are any events that you want to hit on here at this segment, or wait until we come back?
For me, as far as my programming, it's kind of wrapped up until fair, but the Cherokee County Fair, let me grab those dates real quick. It's coming up pretty quick. So the week of the 12th through the 18th. So the 17th is actually the last day, but that's the Cherokee County Fair week. So it's coming up here in a couple weeks.
Okay.
So pretty exciting time.
That's going to be good. So we have a little bit of fair stuff we probably hit on here next segment. But Kenny, also, what do you want to talk about?
So my next segment, I'll also mention my fair dates because I've got a little tidbit for fairs just to help prep you guys. We got four counties this time, so even more fair dates. And then I'll also talk about some caterpillar pests and maybe some grub pests because we're starting to see stuff going on in the lawn and the trees. I feel like I talk about bugs all the time, but it's important to know what's out there. Whether or not you treat it, it's up to you. But Clayton, I had a question. Aren't you guys offering a plant-to-plate camp?
We are, and that's coming in the later part of July.
And this is kind of piggybacking on the plant-to-plate camps we had up in Wildcat District in Pittsburgh and Independence this year, and then three places last year. They decided to have some plant-to-plate camps, and that's awesome.
Yes. Yep. Those dates, they should be... How about I get those dates, and I'll get them to you the next segment.
Yeah, we'll get them in the next segment, so we make sure we get
I'm
all
pretty
that
sure
right
I know them off the top of my head, but I'll just make sure.
Okay, we'll check on that and return with more on our Green Setup program. That's next. You're on KGGF. Back here on the Mighty 690, it is 8:10, and we continue along with our Green Side Up program here. We have Clayton Lester, Cherokee County Extension, and we also have, from the Wildcat District, Kenny Dodson. Good morning once again to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so as we go throughout here, the second segment, we teased it a little bit, but we've got Kenny going to be talking a little bit about some of those garden pests this time of year, so they're always trying to get something. Seems like.
Absolutely. And like I always tell people, sometimes it's worse because when a plant gets stressed out, maybe it is the heat, maybe it's from inches and inches of rain, the plant gets stressed and that invites more room for bugs to, you know, come pester them even more. The ones I'm going to talk about today are mostly going to be tree pests because I get a lot of tree questions and everyone's got a tree usually. And I'll also hit on some grubs because grubs are a lawn pest that, you know, we see the June beetles around and we're like, ah, yuck, June beetles. And then we're like, we don't think about the tiny little worm that they come from and the fact that that worm will eat your grass roots. There's also a few other grubs, but I think of June beetles and that also helps you figure out timing. So the first one I'm going to talk about is going to be the walnut caterpillar. And the second one I'm going to talk about is going to be the fall webworm. Both of these are two caterpillar pests for trees. Obviously, the fall webworm is the one that makes those webs. And we'll talk about that next. The first one's walnut caterpillar. Walnut caterpillar is going to be a smallish, hairy-ish worm, usually red to black. Right now is about the time that they're hatching and eating. Katie actually sent me some photos from Labette County where they are all massed up on a tree trunk. They tend to come from the ground, and then they work their way up the trunks. Well, they'll start to kind of mass and eventually just congregate as worms. They're small. They go from red when they're young to black when they're more mature, and they've got a bunch of hairs on them. These ones, I don't believe... Oh, I shouldn't offer unqualified advice. Most hairy caterpillars can be dangerous. I don't believe these ones are. Fact check me, please. But the general consensus is a lot of hairy caterpillars have those hairs for defense, so you shouldn't touch them. Check on these ones. But they'll climb up your tree and they'll start to eat the leaves. They're a defoliating kind of caterpillar. And obviously they're a walnut caterpillar, which doesn't just mean walnuts, because walnuts are related to pecans and related to hickory trees. They can hit a few more, like oaks and I believe maples too, but walnut, pecan, hickory are the ones. Usually if you see them start to get leafless or they start to be eaten up, or if you see a giant bunch of little black worms, that's going to be them usually. When they're disturbed, they tend to arch their front and their back, kind of like in a claw or a U-shape, so that's also distinctive. But how do you get rid of them? Beyond just taking a bucket out with some soapy water and just, you know, scraping them off your tree, if it's easy enough for you to do that, pretty simple, quick, efficient way to do it, you can also spray your tree. So just like bagworms, my usual chemical control for any caterpillar is going to be BT and spinosad. Those are the two also organic options. And there's stronger things like acephate, and there's things like pyrethroids or permethrin or those things that end in thrin, but those are also the kills all bugs type of thing. And they hurt more beneficial insects than they hurt pest insects. So it's kind of a very controlled, you have to know this is what you want to spray to save the tree at all costs and hurt other things as well. And for the most part, a lot of Mother Nature exists in the fact that there's beneficial insects that help kill the bugs. There's plenty of assassin bugs and other caterpillar predators, carnivores, that will eat those bugs for you. But if they're starting to form that big ball of worms all over your tree, if they're covering limb after limb after limb and chewing them up, that's when you step in to take care of them. So like I said, BT and spinosad are going to be those two. There's also acephate, and there's also some permethrins, or pyrethroids. Anything that ends in thrin, that's my general grouping of them. But then we've also got fall webworms. And James, have you seen any webs in trees?
I have, yes.
I have also seen webs in trees. And it's not a good sign, because they're called fall webworms. And we just hit July. So with all the weather we've had recently, the warmer temperatures and the warmer winter as well, I think everything's just on a faster track this year. A lot of plants are on a faster track, and then they're definitely on a faster track because they're webbing up. You can spray them as well, but obviously if you're spraying a big mass of webs, it's not really going to help control them because all the chemical spray is on the outside of the webs. So sometimes... a lot of times the recommendation is, oh, if you can just lop off that section and burn it or destroy it as fast as possible, they're still young, they're still caterpillars, that's why they're spinning their webs and their silks, and getting rid of them now prevents them from overwintering and coming back. However, if you've got a young tree, like I've seen a few young trees have, like, one of their branches, which is half of their canopy, gets covered in the webs, and you don't really want to trim that out. So if you can, you can try to strip the limb. It's easier and safer than pruning out the whole limb or the whole branch. Or if you can, you can also do some kind of getting inside the web, either with your spray nozzle, either with a garden hose and disturbing them that way. That can help. But if your trees haven't yet got them, that's when you can spray your BT, your spinosad, or your other options. Because once they start the web, that's when you only have to rely on mechanical hand removal.
Do they have any natural predators like birds that might get in there? And
they do have some, but it's also kind of harder when it's all webbed up like that. There's also another one called the Eastern Tent Caterpillar, and that's the one that makes the branch webs sort of like in the junctions and the crotches of the branches. The webworms, you know, you always see them hanging out on the edges, and they're poking out on the tree line. The tent caterpillars are making them pretty close to the trunk, or close to the branch crotches, where it's still small and they can get a lot more shelter that way too. They have some, but they also make that web for defense. The walnut caterpillars just kind of have numbers as defense. They're a little easier to get predators onto.
Gotcha. We've got Kenny Dodson here talking some horticulture-related topics. Anything else when it comes to these pests?
The last thing I just want to touch on was grubs, because it's better to treat them early than treat them not at all. Almost any of your grub control bags of chemicals at the stores are going to be preventatives, so it's best to put them down now. As I mentioned, we've got those June bugs, and it helps to know, oh, they're June bugs. They're around in May and June, more or less, June beetles, if you want to be specific. But that means the adults are around that time, and they're laying eggs around June, July. And those eggs turn into the grubs that eat your grass roots. So if you can get a grub preventer down now, that'd be great. Otherwise, one of your only curative control options is going to be Dilox or trichlorophan. But Dilox is easier to remember.
So the grubs will hatch into the June bugs, basically, like
yes.
In the earlier, into the spring, right?
Yes.
That's kind of the life cycle, grub to June bug.
Mm-hmm. And so usually early on, July, August, they've hatched. They're a little bitty worm, the white grub, in your soil. They're chewing on your grass roots. They're eating organic matter in the soil. And they start to turn into a pupa. And that pupa overwinters. And then they pop out as the beetle. There's a few other beetles, too, but June bugs is the easiest one to remember.
A little creepy.
I'm not a fan of either life cycle stage.
Because I can't tell you with all certainty that I remember that they were the same thing. You know, you just see these pop up and you're like, oh, a bug.
Yeah.
So it came from something. So now, when it comes to one question I had for you, onions. Is there any bugs out there that like to eat the tops, or is that usually some of the larger critters that like to get into that?
It's a bit of both. I can't think of the one specifically, but like your flea beetles and your things that like just chew on plants, they can get those. It's not usually as bad as your leafy stuff or like your really leafy stuff. Yeah, I don't have any specifics off the top of my head.
I think it might be the deer.
It's probably also the deer.
Because
they
came out and they get right up to the house. Mm-hmm, so they're just like, then they'll knock stuff out. They'll just graze.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's kind of indiscriminate, too. Sometimes they'll just take a few and leave.
And also,
the
if the whole top is gone, that's definitely deer.
Yeah.
If you're starting to see like some tears or some spots, like chew spots, that's going to be an insect.
Can't live with them, can't live without them. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And now I'm switching gears just a little bit. We do have a bunch of fairs kicking off. I know, Clayton, you were talking about that here just a little bit earlier with Cherokee County Fair. But any fair prep that we might want to keep in mind as we head towards this fair time?
So on behalf of my 4-H agents, I'd like to remind everybody to read your fair book. Make sure all your entries are done when they should be done. I'm not in charge of that, so that's just my little plug. Me as someone who's judged and somebody who will judge at least one or two fairs this year, just reminding you that when you're getting your exhibits ready, there's the ribbon scoring system, and the ribbon doesn't always matter. It's a learning opportunity. It's how you go about the fair that matters. If you do want to be competitive and look for your ribbons, I always tell people, you know, the judge only judges what you presented. And sometimes if you can talk to them, you can tell them the knowledge you had or what you did and help them get some more insight. But otherwise, they're just judging what's in front of them at that day. So if you can, pick your best items. If you're exhibiting produce, make sure you check for those tomato cracks. If you see the tomato cracks, maybe don't give those tomatoes. If they're big and juicy enough, or if you think, you know, your plate will look good enough with them, you could try it, but the judge only sees what you gave them that day. For the most part, well, white's going to be like the lowest ranking, that doesn't meet any qualifications. I consider the disqualification class, but some judges are just harsher and they think you have to work for the higher ribbons. So if you really want to work for the higher ribbons, make sure you've got good quality, good uniformity. Produce has to be like market quality. Bouquets have to be a little bit more subjective, but still have some kind of function and form, some thought behind it, and ideally some kind of artistic appeal. Things that I'm not entirely qualified for, but like your canning, your sewing, your facts related things, follow your recipes, make sure you've tested them out if it's a baked good or something, make sure that you're checking your crochet patterns and all your quilting and stuff, making sure nothing's out of place, nothing's wrong, make sure your photography photos are mounted properly. That's an easy way to get them dinged or disqualified or dropped down a ribbon or two if they're just not entered properly.
So just follow that book. Make sure you've got all the guidelines in place. I know, just from observing some of the horticulture-related things, I mean, they'll want it usually seems like a certain number of produce, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's usually like a 5 medium-sized tomato, 5 or 4, 10 for smaller items, 1 for the big stuff. If you're not meeting those numbers, that's also a super easy way to get dropped down a ribbon or stuck in a white or disqualified. And if you're not quite sure what class your exhibit goes in, you can always ask the superintendent who's there or ask any official who's there to help you figure out what class it's going to be in. Some people are pretty easy and they're like, well, we'll just swap that class. They didn't get it right. But as long as you enter everything right, you've got the best looking or the best presentation you can, that's all that matters.
Very good.
And
so, yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. A good reminder, because it is it's supposed to be a fun experience and a learning experience. So always love seeing the hard work that goes into all of those different entries. So Clayton, anything else to share when it comes to fair prep or anything like that over for Cherokee County?
Yeah. So talk a little bit about livestock. So as we starting to transition, we're starting to get a lot of hot weather, especially during the week of the fair. Make sure animals are well watered and everything like that. And another thing that people... excuse me, another thing people probably don't think about, but whenever you're washing your livestock and you start that process, introduce water to them slowly, especially during this hot temperature. We start introducing water to their skin, especially with pigs. It could introducing too much water to them could also put them in shock, because in fact, like pigs, they don't sweat like other animals do, so they can't alleviate that heat like other animals can, so that could put a stress on them as well. So reducing those stressors and keeping water in front of them, and definitely some feed. But in our hotter weather and our hotter temperatures, they definitely love water more than anything. So making sure that they're well cared for during the fair, so alleviate some, a lot of stress for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure that as well, you know, are there any veterinary requirements that you have to have, you know, because obviously the last thing we want to do is spread any sort of diseases when it comes to the fair time.
Exactly. Right off the top of my head, I believe there probably is. I just can't think of it right
sure,
now.
Sure, it'll be in the fair book.
Exactly, so exactly in the fair book.
Very good. So, yeah, lots of prep work going into some of these events. I know Kenny says you're going to be judging some of the horticulture items. Are you going to be, Clayton, judging any of the fair stuff coming up?
Far as I know, not right now. So, yeah.
They haven't tapped you yet, maybe.
Exactly.
You just wait. But I know you did want to talk about an upcoming event that's on the way for Cherokee County, right?
Yeah, so, like, Kenny and Catherine Den Wildcat District, we got a program coming up just like it. So Plants to Plate, it's going to be July 28th through the 30th. It's $15 per person from ages 9 to 12, and it's from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. all 3 days. So that's July 28th through the 30th from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., ages 9 to 12, with the cost of $15. Must attend all 3 days. So.
And that's at the Cherokee County Extension Office?
Yep, exactly, at the Cherokee County Extension Office.
Very good. And Kenny, any events for the Wildcat District you'd like to go over?
Well, we've got four counties, so that means four fairs, quite a few fairs, and also Montgomery's kind of special because we've got the Cherryville Fun Fair, and then we've got the Interstate Fair as our last one as well. The Labette County Fair is the 18th to the 25th. Wilson County Fair is 21 to 26. Montgomery Fair is 22 to 27. These are all July dates. I probably should have clarified, but for the most part, July is fair season, except for Crawford County, which goes from July 29th to August 1st. They're a little late on the draw.
Okay.
And then I've got a few events coming up for some of our summer interns. Our summer intern in the Altamont office is hosting two specific events. I believe rooms still open, RSVPs are still open. There's going to be a baking and decorating class from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. On July 6th and 7th. I believe it's both days. And then there's going to be July 9th is the electric excitement, how to do electrical conductivity tests. They're using like pennies and metals, like simple metals, but also showing that electrical conductivity. That's July 9th at 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. Both of these are free. Please call the office because I don't know the exact details.
That's all right. That sounds good. And of course, anything else as we kind of wrap up here?
I believe that's it. Just make sure your plants are okay.
I did think of one thing. Yes. We do have a youth tractor obstacle course, and I will be judging that with another gentleman as well.
Hey.
So we're excited about that. We got a few different things. I just thought about that right now. So we got a few different obstacles we're going to add. So like a pulling like a gravity wagon, so something that kind of walks and turns in separate parts. Probably like a flat deck trailer that pivots off the back. Then I think we're going to probably have like a hydrostatic tractor with your forward, neutral, and reverse. Then we've also talked about maybe having like a tractor that you don't necessarily need a clutch, you know, with a high and low and your different forward and reverse speeds. So adding a little bit different there. But yeah, we got a tractor obstacle course. So pretty excited about that.
That'll be very good. Well, Clayton, if folks need to get a hold of you over in Cherokee County, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, our phone number is 620-429-3849.
All right, and Kenny, what about you?
The Independence office number is 620-331-2690.
All right, well, appreciate you guys coming on by, and we look forward to chatting again here real soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that is a Green Setup program here on the Mighty 690, brought to you by Green Acres here in Coffeyville. On the way next, we have a Farm to Fork. We'll have a Words of Inspiration program and get into Open Line next.